Pitch Talks, brought to you by North Star Bets. That's a win.
Hello and welcome. Come on in. Sit right down with us. It's time for another episode of Pitch Talks. I am your boy, the Zoobs, Andrew Zuber from The Parlay, joined as always by Nick Ashburn from North Star Bets. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Absolutely.
Playoff baseball is basically here. We know who is going to the playoffs. There's some organization to go, but we know the gist of it. We know who's winning the divisions in the American League, at least. And we know the Blue Jays will be hosting the wild card series. We're going to find out in the next coming hours, according to who they're going to play, probably the Mariners. But we got a lot to talk about around the league, playoff baseball. One of my favorite things, because baseball, you know this and I know this, predicated on this huge season, 6 months, 7 months, day in, day out, 162 games, the best teams make it. And then it's like, okay, best two or three, go nuts. Completely antithetical to everything else. It makes me so excited. I am getting my anticipatory nerves ready. Just the other day I was like, oh my God, there's a playoff game on Friday. This is going to be crazy. I'm fired up, as you can tell, I'm sure. Nick, you're bursting out of the chair here.
Oh yeah.
It's exciting times.
Yeah, I mean, my enthusiasm is more reserved, but that's my character. That's not how, I have a British background. It's unavoidable.
There we go.
You put the nail on the head in terms of the season and the playoffs being such different animals. Like, there is a lack of urgency that sometimes comes with baseball. Like, sometimes you kind of throw the white flag up there in a game. Like, your starter's not great, and then you put in a garbage guy to eat innings so that the next day
right. You'll
be all right, and you bring players out of the game. There's none of that. We are playing every single inning like it's our last, because it may very well be. I know that sometimes the playoffs can be a little bit slow for certain fans. Like, the time of the game does
sure. Increase. 4.5
more
hours.
Pitching changes, more matchups. It can be a bit of a grind, but it is a beautiful grind, if that's something that makes sense.
Yes, I think that's perfectly said. We talked on this show a couple weeks ago about the machinations of the wild card series, and would the Jays maybe rather finish third? Would you rather play Cleveland? Would you rather try to avoid the Trop? Would you rather avoid Seattle? I think we can agree, though, that the best thing you can do is play at home. In the craziness of a 2-3 game series, playing at the Rogers Center is the best thing for this team. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you could have made that argument about Cleveland and the quality of that team. They're actually a bit of a tough matchup for the Blue Jays.
Yeah,
I think that the way they put the ball in the play, how left-handed they are, it's a little bit tricky. The Rogers Center, we know what the atmosphere can be like during a playoff game. It is impossible to quantify. What does the noise, what does the energy do in relation to a slider coming off the plate or hanging over the middle? We're never going to know that, but we do know that it's meaningful. We do know they've been outstanding at home this year. You know, vaccination status has had something to do with that, but not everything to do with that. And they're clearly, I think, the strongest of these wild card teams. And now they've got home field advantage as well. You've got to feel pretty good about their chances.
Yeah, and we have a lot of Jays talk to come on this episode. Andrew Stoughton, your co-host on the Blue Jays Happy Hour, is going to join us, also from the batflip.ca. One of my old co-workers as well, somebody we know very well, somebody who is a finger on the pulse of Blue Jays Nation. So looking forward to that. Dive a little bit more into some of the players, and I think you made a great point there with the atmosphere. Remember 2015, 2016, how electric it was in there, and the Johnny Cueto getting thrown off his game, and all those sort of things that sort of unquantifiable, but ultimately definitely a part of the atmosphere. Speaking of part of the playoffs, the Blue Jays just red hot in September and October. Unbelievable. Bo Bichette was incredible. Whit Merrifield is no longer a pumpkin. He is once again a beautiful chariot, really helping with Espinal going down and Biggio cooling off a little bit. Merrifield really did need to step up. Danny Jansen had a great month. Even Raimel Tapia, sort of his usefulness really brought itself to the forefront. Are you buying those breakouts? Obviously, the team as a whole hit extremely well in September, but are you buying sort of those individual performances, maybe Bichette stealing a little, you know, unrealistic, but some of the other stuff, Merrifield, Jansen, Tapia, how do you feel?
I think you got to take it case by case, right? Like, if you start with Bichette, he's a really, really good hitter. We've seen him maybe not reach these heights before, but it's not something that's unfathomable based on his skill set. And there's actually been some work done on his batting stance and his mechanics and how they have changed in September. It feels like there's something tangible there. Is he a 200 WRC plus type of hitter through the playoffs? Probably not. You come up against really good pitching. So
yeah. You
kind of have to expect all of your position players will do a little bit worse just because the quality of the pitching is going to improve across the board. You know, going player by player here. You know, Ryan Maltapia, don't expect anything different. Like, he, when the balls fall in for him, they fall in. He's had a little bit of power in the middle of the year. He's shown that a little bit again at the end. But, you know, you're happy if he's an average hitter, and he probably won't be that against high-level pitching. Whit Merrifield's just a lot of fun, right? Like, that, yeah. he had huge Jonathan VR vibes, like a player who is traditionally produced and just comes to the Blue Jays and is dreadful. But now if you look at just his Blue Jays career, if you can use that term, as a whole, he's been a far above average hitter. Like, he's has a WRC plus approaching 130 as a Blue Jay, even though he was dreadful
Crazy.
For sort of the first
Hard to believe.
25 games or so. I don't know, man. Like, a guy in his 30s, is he suddenly going to have this power? I don't think so. But second base became a huge concern all of a sudden, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Biggio went ice cold. Espinal got injured. And suddenly there was a black hole in the Blue Jays lineup where the whole strength of this team has been how you just can't find an out in the lineup and they're consistent throughout. He's really helped that continue when he thought it might not. However, again, you know, we've seen him for a long time. He's a slap hitter with some speed. Jansen's an interesting one because he's been really, really good as long as he's healthy since kind of late last year. A little bit of a swoon mid-season. Amazing in the last month or so. And also, if you pay close attention, it's not just the power, which is what he's doing now. Like, he's doing his Jose Bautista pull everything in the air thing. Like, that's what he is now, not to that extent.
It's a comp.
Careful. But he's also, the plate discipline's been better in the last month or so. He's walking a lot more and he's striking out less. It used to be when he went to this power approach, he was making those sacrifices. He was taking fewer walks. He was striking out a little more. Now the plate discipline with this, like, he looks like your catcher through the playoffs. And like, Kirk should be in that lineup too as the DH, and just worry if someone gets hurt, you just worry about that then. But I think Jansen is your catcher in the playoffs because of the defensive advantage and just how well he's hitting.
Quickly, you carrying three catchers into the playoffs?
No, I don't know. I think managers have always overestimated the risk of using both catchers in one game because, okay, let's say Jansen gets hurt, which hopefully for his sake doesn't happen. You bring Kirk out of the DH spot, you lose the DH spot. But really, you can just cycle your bench players. Like, how many times is it going to come up in the game? Maybe three more times. You cycle your bench player in there as needed to pinch hit for those pitchers. Maybe if it goes to the 12th inning, you might have to have a reliever hit. Like, yeah. That's the worst case scenario. So I always felt that people who are really scared of that eventuality, potentially were overestimating the risk of injury in the first place, but also just how bad it would be for you.
I think speaking to that depth of the players we just talked about, Tapia, Merrifield, Jansen, those sort of the bottom of the lineup has really been what has turned this from a team that we had the potential to the team that really does look like what we expected them to be. It's easy to get into the Bichettes and the Guerrero for all the warts ends up having a very nice numbers year. Chapman has had his hots and colds. We know what Teoscar can do. We know George Springer, obviously an all-star level guy at the top of the lineup. I think the bottom of that lineup really is where the wheat separates from the chaff there. I think that really is sort of going to be the advantage and going to be the thing that, if that's clicking, I mean, geez, look out. That's some serious damage. Speaking of the serious damage, I want to get into, quickly before we talk to Stoughton, what's your biggest concern and what's your biggest, what's the opposite of concern? Serenity? What's the opposite of concern?
Something makes you calm. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Cup of tea, whatever it happens to be. What's your biggest pro and your biggest con? Other than, of course, the randomness of the universe in a three-game series.
You just touched on the pro. Like, the way they have strength through the lineup and depth with their position players is a differentiator for them. Like, a lot of other teams have stars. A lot of other teams have guys at the top of the rotation they can really trust. Very few teams have that level of depth with their lineup that the Blue Jays have. And I think that it is a very difficult lineup to navigate. And a lot of teams are very top heavy. You know, the Yankees, we talk about them. Like, they're kind of top five heavy in their lineup. The Blue Jays can really roll through. You don't get easy innings. You don't get innings where you're like, I'm going to throw my less good reliever out and save my good reliever for this part of the lineup. Like, they are strong. That is what makes them special. Even though some of the other things, like the starters, like Manoah, Gausman, obviously great. But I think other teams have that too.
Right.
And then my concern is, it's weird to say this, left-handed human beings will be difficult for the Blue Jays. In terms of pitching, all year long, even though they're a right-handed lineup, they've done worse against left-handed pitching. And most of their guys historically haven't. It's not even like a one-year fluke. Like, Vladdy's always been worse against left-handers. He struggles with those change-ups. That's a bit of a worry against sort of ace-level left-handed pitchers. And then out of the bullpen, you really have Tim Mesa as one matchup guy that you can turn to. So I think teams that bring a lot of left-handed power to the table, especially later in the games, could give the Blue Jays some concerns.
Yeah, that's one when there was all the hubbub about the deadline. The lack of left-handed relievers was the one for me. It was like, if Mesa goes down, it's Matt Gage. Like, they really don't have a second lefty that they can go to. I think I agree with you. The lineup depth really does seem like, as you mentioned, like Danny Jansen is a guy that most teams would love to have. And it's been like, there's been a discussion all year about whether he's even the starting catcher because of how good Kirk has been. And they have this prospect they were going to bring, that they were going to use Gabriel Moreno, as sort of very interesting. My concern, I think, and as again, I think the lineup depth is a pretty obvious pro, and especially how good they've been hitting in the last month. It's sort of the exact right time to have Merrifield find it, to have these guys find their roles. My concern is similar to sort of what you mentioned, not so much the lefties, but Alek Manoah is a big game guy. He's the dude that you want in game one. I worry if they don't win the Manoah game, all of a sudden it's like just a flop sweat, because Stripling has been great and Gausman has been very good as well, but they don't have a monopoly on great pitching no matter who they're going to play. They're going to run into good pitching in every series. Every team they play that's in the playoffs has good pitching. I'm not as confident as I feel like I should be in the Stripling Gausman thing, which I know it says more about me than it does about them. But the bad luck that has sort of seemed to follow Gausman around this year, and the Cinderella of Ross Stripling sort of has me.
Yeah, I get that. They both have, it's a very different type of worry, right?
Yeah.
Like, the highs are so high with Gausman. He can be an amazing strikeout pitcher. He can make teams look foolish, but there have just been times when the splitter's not there.
Yeah.
And that is troubling for him. And then Stripling, as you said, it's a Cinderella story. You worry about, like, the track record is there, but he's just so hard to believe in because he just doesn't have the raw stuff. Like, it is pitchability, to use that cliche. It
for
is
sure.
Command. And those things seem more likely to desert you than pure stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, pure stuff is never going to, your 97-mile-an-hour fastball is not going to suddenly be 92 unless you're injured.
Right.
But one day, your command can just go, and that can happen to anyone, as good as Stripling has been.
And the blister on Gausman, yeah, and the two-pitch guy. I'm just being nervous. Before we move on, something lighthearted, some levity, as we are wont to do. The Blue Jays had a clinching clubhouse party. Lots of highlights for me. We had Teoscar dancing on the tables. A lot of goggles. Goggles is now like standard practice. Sort of have to have the
That's
goggles
smart,
on.
That's though. There's a lot of alcohol in the air.
I agree. Jordan Romano getting famous with the sneaky dart. Sneaky. He's from Marshall.
I mean, not that sneaky.
he's an Italian guy from North Toronto. He's going to have a cigarette when he's had a couple drinks. That's sort of just the way it is. Some highlights that have stuck out for you in the party. My picks, obvious, the sneaky dart and the Teoscar on the tables for me. Maybe the John Schneider speech?
I'm going to go with the part, this is a bit of an odd one, but sort of after the primary party was over in the clubhouse, they come out onto the field and they don't know what they're supposed to be doing. Like, we're talking about 25, 30 guys more. And they've been brought out to the field, but for no discernible reason.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch, mainly it's a bunch of white guys standing around,
sure,
to be honest. And then Vladdy is just busting like a ton of dance moves and no one else is doing anything. I thought that was fantastic. I thought that was great television. Shout out to Hazel May.
Absolutely.
Really good job in difficult circumstances, reminding everyone it was live. Not that that always helped,
certainly not.
But she absolutely did her best. So, you know, like you said, Teoscar with the pirate flag was pretty great. I thought Biggio dumping his beer on Hazel May stood out to me just because it seemed very out of character, like,
sure,
kind of a taciturn human being a lot of the times. It was weird because I kept thinking, If they had lost, what would have this looked like? Because they said win or lose, they're gonna have a celebration. But it would have looked kind of, at least maybe at the beginning, maybe it would have taken some time to get going. But starting off that party when you just lost 12-2 is like it's an odd one.
They happened to get the blowout win, which is nice.
Very good.
We saw some parties around the league. The playoff picture more or less set. We know who is going to be in the playoffs, especially in the NL. We have the Dodgers at 110 wins. The Braves and Mets sort of still battling to avoid the wild card. The Braves are a game and a half up as of recording with two to go. We're going to assume the Braves probably hold on. The Astros and Yankees will be waiting in the ALDS. And we have some wild card teams, the Rays, the M's, the Padres, the Phillies, probably the Mets. When you look at it as a whole, we can get a little further on down the road and get specific matchups. What intrigues you early on looking at the playoff picture?
It seems to me that you've got the two huge powers, right? You have the Dodgers and the Astros. It feels like we've been here before.
No kidding. It's a repeat.
Those teams seem like a cut above everyone else. I'm kind of interested in who's going to make a splash in that middle ground. Like, not talking about the wild cards, the real underdogs. And there's some talented teams there, too, the Blue Jays among them. But who among the Yankees, the Mets, the Braves, who of those teams... potentially the Cardinals, although maybe not the same level. Like, who in that kind of middle group is going to make a splash? Because you'll probably see, you know, we talked about the randomness before, we'll probably see a run from someone we don't expect. And those teams are good enough that it wouldn't feel like a pure Cinderella, like, wow, this is what can happen in the playoffs. Like, they're good enough that you wouldn't be shocked. And I'm curious which one of those teams is going to come through. The Yankees, they look pretty good lately. It seems like they've found their footing again. The Mets have that really scary pitching at the top. You know, the Cardinals are kind of like the Blue Jays in that position player depth. That is a very interesting group of teams for me.
Yes, for me, I think the sneaky team that maybe hasn't been getting the press, I don't know whether if it's just sort of the fact that they won last year or that it was so New York focused. The Atlanta Braves, I think, are really waiting in the weeds here to be a dangerous team. I think the win of the World Series last year, sort of, you want to talk about that playoff experience, it maybe doesn't have any value at all, especially in a three-game series, but they're going to be able to bypass if they win the AL and the NL East. They're going to go straight to the DS, which I think will probably help some nerves. And they have, you know, we've talked about the Rookie of the Year candidates. They have more than one. They got Acuna. They have pitching. They have experience. I got my eye on the Atlanta Braves. We're going to talk at the end of this show on the run line about some of those lines, some value you can find at North Star Bets, some great stuff to get there. You sort of hinted at it. I want a quick take on you. Do you have a wild card sleeper team, a team maybe under the radar that's going to have a long slog but could make some noise?
I kind of like the Seattle Mariners. You know, maybe a little bit of that magic, you know, it's been so long, the franchise gets to exhale, a little bit of a found money type of vibe with them, and really strong pitching at the top of the rotation. They don't have the offensive firepower that some of these other teams have, but at the end of the day, you know, they can make some noise, kind of a la the Brewers in recent years in the playoffs, where they're kind of built for it in a sense, even if they might not have the same top level offensive talent.
I am going to say, every time the St. Louis Cardinals get into the playoffs, it seems like the same story. You look at the regular season, you're like, oh, they won like a mid to high 80s, doesn't really jump out at you. You're like, eh, whatever. And then they storm through the NL and suddenly they're playing for the World Series and they're up 2-1. I can see it happening now. The great Pujols.
Now I've got Pujols
the
back.
The Pujols story. Yeah, Pujols is back. They have the guys in the corners, Arenado and Goldschmidt. They have that. You have the one last dance for Wainwright and Yachty and Pujols. The story lines up for me really nicely, and I think too many times in my life have I seen the Cardinals limp in a terrible NL Central and win 84 games and be a Jays fan who just watched the team win like 86 and not come near the playoffs and be like, the Cardinals aren't very good, and all of a sudden they're hoisting the World Series trophy. So I have my eye on the St. Louis Cardinals, I will tell you.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
We're going to quickly go to the mailbag before we get to our guest. Two excellent questions here in the mailbag. The first one comes from Piri Piri Pie on Twitter. If you're going to all three playoff games at Rogers Center this weekend, what does breakfast, lunch, and dinner look like on Friday, Saturday, Sunday? I mean, Canadian Thanksgiving Sunday sort of seems like
the Thanksgiving and it's Blue Jays fight. There's going to be some drama with it's some families over the weekend in terms of how much time is allotted to watching the game
yes.
and family activities. I think we can take that out maybe. Like, that's a special circumstance. To be honest, this question feels more in your lane. So I think I'd like sure. to see what you've got, and then maybe I'll make a few adjustments.
I'm guessing they're going to play in the afternoon on Friday. Let's start with that. You can bring food into the Rogers Center, which I do recommend. They have good food there, but there's a grocery store right around the corner. I would be going chips and a sandwich probably for the Friday game, because a lot of the line, you're going to have the longest pregame ceremony. It's going to be the biggest sort of preamble. You don't want to be waiting in lines. A Noah start could be fairly quick, could be pretty intense, a lot of fiery emotions. If they're playing Seattle, even doubly so. So I would probably go chips and a sandwich, maybe a bottle of water for the Friday game. And then Saturday feels like a pizza day. Saturday and pizza to me go pizza and a beer on a Saturday. You can sort of let loose a little bit more. Not that you couldn't on Friday, but you slept in. Maybe you're feeling good because they played well on Friday in the Manoa start. You're thinking pizza and beer. We can do this. No problem. As for what the rest of the day, I mean, this is breakfast, lunch, dinner. I'm not going to give you every meal.
That's a lot. That's nine meals. So we don't have time for that.
And whatever you eat for breakfast is what you have for breakfast. There's no need to delineate from routine from breakfast. That's the most important meal of the day. You should make sure you get a balanced breakfast, orange juice, eggs, whatever it is, banana, probably. I don't know. What do you have for breakfast usually?
I'm not the right person to ask. I believe, I firmly believe that the idea of breakfast food is insane. And you should eat whatever you want for breakfast. If that's leftovers from previous dinner, if that's something that feels like dinner food to you, I like to get the day started with a big breakfast to energize me out of the gate. And a lot of things that I eat for breakfast are considered to be absolutely wild by the people in my life.
That is wild. I was going to say, I'm a proponent of for me, it's very simple: peanut butter on toast, piece of fruit, black coffee, glass of water.
Oh, I love the Uber Eats 2-for-1, and then you eat one for dinner, and then you eat the next one for breakfast. Pad Thai for breakfast, butter chicken.
Yeah, cold leftovers on the weekend is not bad. And Sunday, Thanksgiving, I'm going to let your family sort that out how they will. I know I am lucky enough to live in a we can watch TV during Thanksgiving dinner if the Jays are playing family. Rusty Hoser had to get you. Listen, your name is Rusty Hoser and you put a question in. I'm reading it. If the Jays win game one, is it worth starting game two with Stripling to save Gausman for a must win game three? Or is it getting too cute? We'll talk about this a little bit more with our guest, Andrew Stoughton. But I would love to know what you think about this. I will first say, I mean, I think you have to know before the series starts who you're putting in game two. I don't want to be the day before be like, hey, by the way, you're pitching tomorrow. But what do you think about Stripling in game two?
I don't like it. I think you got to go to Gausman. Like, it's a short series, right? Like, fiddling around too much doesn't make sense to me. Even though Stripling has been really good, even though Gausman has been inconsistent at times, I think we both agree who the better pitcher is, who the better bet is. Finish the series. We're not looking to sell as many tickets as possible and go to a game three. You know, Gausman's no guarantee. If you pitch him, it doesn't mean you are going to win by any means. But the idea, like, I think the question says it. Like, it's just too cute to mess around with it. It might feel weird to be in a game three must-win scenario and Ross Stripling is on the mound. But that's just the nature of these short series. Also, when you think about the next series, potentially, you want to give those guys as much rest as possible, your big horses. You know, the Blue Jays, if you think back to 2015, for instance, you know, R.A. Dickey is on the mound in a game that they absolutely had to win yeah. just because that's the way the series works out. So for me, you just play it very down the middle. Manoa, Gausman, Stripling.
I'm with you. No need to overthink it. Gausman in game two, you know, the only two ways game two can go. You're either trying to save your season or you're trying to close it out. In either one of those situations, I think I want Gausman on the hill. And if you're somebody, as Rusty Hoser I think is with the question, that does believe in Stripling enough, if you believe in him enough in game two, then you should believe in him enough in game three. And I think, you know, sort of make that bet that he's as good as anybody else's game three starter would be. But let's find out what our guest has to say. I think that's a good question for our guest, who is somebody who has had his finger on the pulse of the Blue Jays for quite some time. You know him quite well as the co-host of your podcast, Blue Jays Happy Hour. I know him quite well from my time at Drunk Jays Fans and The Score. We are happy to welcome to Pitch Talks, Mr. Andrew Stoughton. It's our pleasure now to look a little bit back at the Blue Jays season, look a little bit forward at the Blue Jays postseason. We are joined Nick, by one of your co-hosts on a podcast and somebody that I have worked with very closely many times, joining us today from the batflip.ca. It's Andrew Stoughton. Andrew, thank you for coming.
Thank you guys for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Very exciting. The Blue Jays, of course, have clinched home field. They're going to be hosting the 3-game wild card set at the Rogers Center. Not as big a deal, I think, as the last time they made the big clinching. It hasn't been nearly as dramatic. And I think the vibe around the team's been a little bit different. Speaking to that, the Jays are right around the projection where they were preseason. They're projected for 92.5 wins. They have a chance to hit as many as 92, 93. They're right in that area. Even regardless of the actual projections, do you feel like they overachieved or sort of underachieved in the regular season?
I mean, well, there's still a chance to get that half. Like, we'll see how the weather in Baltimore is. No, I mean, I think it would be ridiculous to say that they didn't underachieve. It's been a weird season. It's been a season where, you know, especially just watching the Yankees race out to such a big lead and, an ultimately insurmountable lead in the American League East has colored the vibes, I think, like quite considerably. Because yeah, at the start of the season, everybody thought, you know, the Blue Jays were, even though the projections I think had like the Jays and the Yankees and the Rays are basically the same, everybody kind of thought like the Blue Jays would take a step forward because, you know, Vlad had such a great year last year. And, you know, there's Bo Bichette, who's a great hitter. And you know, all these guys have taken not a step back necessarily. But I think that it's undeniable that they've not produced and didn't have this. I mean, I feel bad saying this at this point because everybody's feeling good about the team, especially, you know, coming out of the series against Boston, their last home series of the regular season, and playing against Baltimore this week. Like, vibes are good. I think they're sort of peaking at the right time. Whit Merrifield doesn't look useless, but ultimately, if we're looking back at the entirety of the season, it's hard not to say it feels like they've underachieved, and it feels like that's sort of colored the conversation for a lot of the year.
One analog for this team, I think, is that 2016 Blue Jays team that was good enough. They made the playoffs, ended up making a little bit of a run in the playoffs, but never quite felt as great as the fans wanted them to be, in part because 2015 was so special. You've been covering the Blue Jays for a long time. That's the most obvious one, but is there any team that this 2020 group reminds you of?
Well, first of all, Nick, it's 2022. Not 2020. It does remind me a little of the 2020 team that sort of backed into the playoffs in a similar way. But that we're all kind of pretending that didn't happen. We're all thankful that we don't have to think about 2020 anymore, ever again. But yeah, I think you're right that the 2016 team is the one that is the correct analog. And I've written about it a couple times this year, just how that season felt like such a grind and such a slog at times, in a way that this one has as well. And yet it was a successful season. It's sort of hard to wrap your mind around it. I don't know if if other sports change the way we perceive what success is or not, but like, I think that, you know, in baseball, you know, 82 wins or 81 wins is a 500 season, right? Like, and it's not that much above 500. Like, there's just so much losing. And so it feels like every time like they lose, it's the end of the world for half of the people I see on Twitter. And it's just, that's just the nature of the sport. And it has been a grind. And I think that I feel that everybody seems to be appreciating what a good season this has been now that things are, you know, the playoffs are finally in the bag. Home field is finally in the bag. Like that's a great thing. But yeah, I think the 2016 team is a great analog. And also I think that, you know, yeah, that team didn't perform to expectations and people kind of were disappointed with it, but also, like, I mean, they got a gift of that start with Trevor Bauer, where he got his hand up on a drone before the start of an ALCS game, which is absurd, but, you know, screw him. And if they got anything out of like Tulo, Bautista, Encarnacion in that series, if it wasn't like just Ezequiel Carrera carrying the team offensively, like that could have been a World Series winner. Like, that was the team that was good enough to do that. And we kind of lose sight of that, I think, sometimes when, you know, they just look listless for like 2 weeks. But that's just the way the sport goes. And hopefully it feels like they're kind of playing their best baseball at the most opportune time, although that, I guess, is not for another couple of weeks.
You mentioned the Twitter reaction, sort of the people online. You have a sizable following, almost entirely, I'm sure, of Jays fans. You sort of represented the alternative media, we'll say, as opposed to sort of the big box outlets. So people may be a little bit less filtered when they are sort of talking to you or discussing things with you in your comments and your replies, calling into the live podcast. How have you, you mentioned the vibes good right now. How have you seen sort of the shift through the year? Maybe the way they were early on, the way they were at the deadline, and the way they are now on the cusp of the playoffs.
We doing a vibe shift, sir? But is a vibe shift happen? I'm
starting like, to feel it. Feels in the air. I feel like, I'll admit it. I feel like it's a vibe shift in the air. Whit Merrifield maybe is the canary in the coal mine.
A little bit. No, I mean, I absolutely, first of all, I block and mute so many people that I don't know that my the echo chamber that I exist in is representative of what the real vibes are. But yeah, it's like there have definitely been days and stretches of play for the Blue Jays this season where I've been like, I just can't engage with this. Like, it's just so down, so sour. And it's been really nice to see it sort of come back around at a great time. You know, you don't want to. And I feel like 2020, which I already said didn't really happen, but I feel like they kind of backed in a little bit at that point, like in that season. I don't know. Again, it's just like the nature of fandom is to like go be high with the highs and low with the lows. So that's all understandable. Like, I can't criticize anyone for being like, oh, this has ruined my night. I spent four hours watching Doug Eddings call balls and strikes. Like, of course, that's a miserable thing to do to yourself. But yeah, it definitely feels like it's been a better situation in the last couple of weeks or the last, like, literally like 4 or 5 days.
Breakout year for Doug Eddings, by the
really?
Way.
Really? Like, oh,
the guy whose name I did not know before this year, and now before the game, I know when Doug Eddings is involved.
Oh, absolutely. This is the thing, right? Like, I mean, any umpire, if you know an umpire's name, he's bad. Like, that's just how that works, right? And so Eddings is kind of like assumed his place in the pantheon of terrible umpires. They're next to Lazdy. I mean, somebody had to take up the mantle after Joe West retired.
Shout out to all the great umpires whose names we don't know at all
and hope to never learn.
Yeah. You guys are fantastic. Some of them, you see those umpire scorecards, it's like 98%. Who the hell is that guy? Perfect.
Speaking of accounts I have blocked and muted,
oh, umpire scorecards?
Can't yeah. do it. Not for me.
I'm a sicko. I like diving into the umpire scorecards. I can't resist.
I do feel guilty to retweeting the umpire scorecard thing, but I'll smash that retweet like as soon as the Jays get like have a bad umpire game. Absolutely, that's getting retweeted.
Oh yeah, and no one questions it either. It's like, oh yeah, 2.1 free runs, boom. I 100% agree, and they lost by one. They have been hosed. It's official. Like, yeah, it's pretty much that simple. We're looking at this wild card series and we don't know who the opponent is yet. It's more likely than not it's the Mariners, but we're not 100% sure. So in coming into that series, and you know, the answer to this question, maybe it's just Whit Merrifield. That name has been said a lot already in this discussion. But who's that one player that gives you that X factor playoff hero vibe? Because in a three-game series, it really can be one guy. Like in baseball, we talk about all the time, you need the full team, you need the depth. But when it comes to, you know, one, two games that need to be won here, it really can be, you know, Raimel Tapia being a home run short of the cycle or whatever it's going to be. Is there anyone that you're getting that feeling from?
I mean, yeah, I think Whit Merrifield is a great name at this point because it's been wonderful to watch him not be terrible. I have no hope that he's going to continue to not be terrible, but we can discuss that, you know, at the start of next season. You know, and I brought up Ezekiel Carrera earlier, like 2016, like he was that guy, right? And you know, I think there are a couple of candidates. It just you got to think about who's going to get plate appearances, right? I mean, Tapia probably will. Jackie Bradley Jr. Can put the ball in play, and that means that bad ball luck can happen, which is, you know, a real backhanded compliment. but But yeah, there's guys like that, or you know, but also like Danny Jansen's a guy, like I'm as an old man, I'm thinking back to like Pat Borders, like the catcher could just go off for a series, and Danny Jansen's shown that too. You know, there's up and down the lineup, you know, and it's weird, it's so weird how like it's just we talked about it before, but like it felt like the season has felt like such a grind and such a disappointment at so many points, and then you kind of look up at the end of the year now. And you're like, oh, wow, like top to bottom, this lineup's really good. Like they have above average hitters all throughout the lineup. Like it's and that means like any of them can do it. I mean, Gurriel can come back and have a great series if he can get onto the field. Santiago Espinal also could come back and look like the all-star he looked like in, you know, what was it, April and May. I don't know. I there's no name to really pick, I don't think. But there's a lot of candidates, obviously.
Bradley Zimmer.
Bradley Zimmer's not one of them.
We know that much. We know it's probably not Bradley Zimmer, unless it's just stolen base that, or a well tracked fly ball to center field.
I mean, on the pitching side, how about Yusei Kikuchi? I mean, the man can strike people out.
He can get a save. The guy can get a save. Like 10 years apart in two different continents, the man has collected a save.
It's him and Romano. You're 1-2. You're 1A, 1B for closers right now.
He needs a light show. They got to figure that out, what the Kikuchi light show looks like.
Speaking of the pitching, speaking of concerns about pitching, I think this is maybe almost sewn up, but there is a question about Jose Berríos. If we had done this before the season started, it would have been like, oh, Berríos is probably starting game one of your playoff run. Now it's like, if you're not putting Manoah in game one, I don't want to hear what you have to say about the rest of it. But I think Gausman is sort of an obvious pick. The question sort of becomes Stripling or Berríos. Stripling's been so good down the stretch. It would be, to me, crazy to not have him in that space. Do you align with that? Is it sort of a what have you done with me lately? Berríos is probably not going to be in the wild card.
I hope so. Yeah, I don't want to see him in the wild card. Like, nothing against him. Everybody seems to think he's a really nice guy and all that stuff. And he's better than he's shown this year. And you know, there's been some encouraging performances in the second half and all that. But man, yeah, I'm the one who want to get too cute with it. I want to go Stripling in game two, right? Like that I feel, you know, you got to win one non-Gausman game anyway. You might as well see if you can maybe save Gausman for game three. And also, Stripling's kind of earned it too, right? Like
for sure.
So for me, like Berríos isn't in the conversation for the wild card series, and he's kind of like, okay, if we need a guy down the line, which, you know, that's not what you're paying him for, obviously, but but you're not paying him for what he's done this year, and he's like, he's put himself in that position. Like I kind of jokingly have said it a few times on Twitter. Like, I don't know, it's a real good fourth starter. I mean, it's not, you don't usually give $120 million to four starters, but the floor is pretty high for him, at least.
I mean, when you compare it to the earnings of your backup closer, you
much great value. Yeah, on an ERA basis, you get. So I think that, you know, we try and go MLB wide on this podcast a little bit, but the Blue Jays focus is there. I think it's fair to assume most of our listeners are Blue Jays fans. You're a longtime Blue Jays partisan. If you have to give people hope for the idea of a Toronto Blue Jays deep playoff run, perhaps beyond just the randomness of the sport, as we know, where does that hope come from for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Astros are going to be a problem for whoever continues in the American League. But, I think the lineup is really deep. I think, you know, Manoah has been incredible. I think Stripling's been incredible as your number three, your nominal number three, and Gausman's obviously outstanding. Like, I think the pitching, even with Berríos being disappointing, with Ryu being hurt, with Kikuchi being Kikuchi, like, I think that they have the horses to get through a seven game or a five game or a three game series. Like, I'll put those guys up against anybody. I mean, don't make me look too hard at, you know, Houston's pitching, but also like I think the lineup is really good too. Like I think the bullpen is sneaky good. Like, I know everybody was, and you mentioned the trade deadline earlier in the vibes, and like people were kind of down on that and they didn't do enough. They did, you know, they didn't go out and get guys who immediately got hurt like other teams did. but like, I don't know, like Anthony Bass has been really good. I mean, Romano has obviously like found another level. You know, Garcia and Tim Meza have been solid. Like, it's not a bullpen that you're going to be like, wow, remember the 2022 Blue Jays bullpen? Like, it's not on that level, but it's also like, extremely competent, which, you know, which will be nice. I mean, you know, you think back to 2015 or 2016, like Brett Cecil getting hurt. It was like that a lot of people will say, like, that was the turning point. Like that they didn't have Brett Cecil was like made a huge difference. And it's like those kind of small marginal things. And I mean, Brett Cecil was good enough to get a 4-year deal from the Cardinals and pitch a couple innings on that, but like those kind of things can mean a lot. And I think that there is interesting depth in the bullpen. I think there is, like, you know, I mean, nobody wants to see Trevor Richards pitching in the playoffs. Nobody wants to see, like, I mean, Nate Pearson, I think, is already kind of out of the picture at this point. But like, Zach Pops looked good lately, and there are guys who, even if, you know, things go awry, they've shown, especially with the bullpen games, with having to deal with Kikuchi, with having to deal with Barrios all year, like, they can go deep and they can, like, give you a lot of innings fairly competently, you know, not every single time, but you don't have to be afraid of the starter comes out of the game, which I think is really interesting and sneaky good about this team.
And quickly, let's throw a quick wet blanket on that. You listed some concerns. What is your big concern? You know, obviously, other than the randomness of a 3-game series, other than, you know, anything Seattle is doing, is it the Vlad actually being the 9th best hitter in the last 30 days on the team? Is it, you know, maybe the bottom of the lineup, suddenly the magic cools off, we get a little bit of a pumpkin return from Whit Merrifield? Where's your sort of A1 concern in this lineup right now?
I mean, well, it's like the error bars are, like, really far apart, right? Like, this team could absolutely, you could completely envision this team going on a deep run, winning the World Series. They could do it. But also, you could just run into, like, back-to-back duds from Gausman and Barrios, and that just sinks you. Or you can run into a week or a month where Vlad just hits everything into the carpet, and only a couple of them squeak through, and half of them feel like they go for double plays. Like, you know, that's what MLB has set up the playoffs to be, I think, in the year 2022. It's not about who is the best team. And we kind of, you know, you hear, it's like, well, I don't want to dump on Buck, who we all love, at his rant the other day, but it's like, you know, being a champion, it's not just about, like, putting your head down and doing it right. Like, there's a lot of crazy stuff that can happen. I think that they could absolutely, like I said, they could absolutely win easily. I don't know if there's one, like, thing that has to go wrong, unless if Manoah has, like, one bad game in the next month, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I was gonna say they are one single bad start, and especially in a 3-game series away from some trouble.
Yeah,
so we're gonna let you go here. Normally in these type of situations, when we bring people on, we force them to do their own plugs. I'm gonna do it for you because I'm involved. You guys like this conversation but wish there was less Zoobs, Stone and I do a podcast called Blue Jays Happy Hour. It's on all your platforms, but it's also live on something called Call-In, which you should all get, and we'll be doing it through the playoffs. It is a fun time, much like this, I would say.
Absolutely. Though, Zoobs, you're welcome anytime. You get in that queue. Get your call.
Get in the call. And you can read Stoughton's work as well throughout the playoffs and the really exciting stuff, which is the waiver deadlines and the Rule 5 draft. And my World Series, the non-tender deadline in November. Thebatflip.ca, you can find all of his work. As well, and Blue Jay Happy Hour, wherever you get your podcast. Stoughton, thank you so much, man, for spending the time with us today.
Thanks, boys. Anytime.
Before we get ready for playoff baseball, Nick, North Star Bets has some incredible futures you can look at. We're going to take a look at the World Series futures. Why screw around with the early rounds? Let's go straight to the whole shebang, the big birthday cake at the end. Let's take a look at some World Series futures from North Star Bets on the Run Line. All right, Nick, you have, well, we know who the teams are that are in contention. There's no taking the White Sox anymore. There's no hoping the Orioles will squeak in and give you plus, I don't even want to know, 10,000 odds. We have the teams that are on the playoff picture. I can run through a few of them for you. The Dodgers obviously favored at plus 315. The Astros plus 385. And you get to the Yankees and the Braves in the plus 500 range, all the way through to the plus 3,000-ish, your Mariners, your Padres, your St. Louis Cardinals. As somebody who is writing the insights for North Star Bets, a great sort of finger on the pulse of the trends in the league, where are you leaning, looking, shopping around for your World Series futures?
Well, one strategy that I like is the idea of you want to get, I think, one of the top two favorites. I think you want those odds, you know, they're not extremely generous. And the reason they're not is because these teams are fantastic and they're the heavy favorites in the AL and the NL. Like, there's no complaining about the Dodgers at plus 315 because this is the best team in baseball. Mm-hmm. What I like is the idea of getting one of those teams and then getting a little bit of a dark horse in the other side of the bracket.
Throw a comma in there.
Yeah. So you get the Dodgers, and then on the other side of the bracket, maybe you get the Mariners. As I referenced before, I think their top-end pitching is really strong. There's a little bit of magic with this team. Julio Rodriguez is back. The top of their order is pretty good. Maybe not the deepest lineup in all of the major leagues. But then on the other side, maybe you get the Astros, and then you get the Cardinals. I probably feel better about the Cardinals than I do about the Mariners, but the odds reflect that too.
Yeah.
The Cardinals are similar to the Blue Jays in the sense that they have this deep lineup that just doesn't have easy outs in it. You know, Lars Nootbaar, I just want to bring up his name because it's a great name, but he's actually broken out and really kind of changed the look of that lineup quite a bit. You know, Arenado and Goldschmidt, two top NL MVP candidates, everything that comes with Albert Pujols back in the playoffs with this team. I like them a lot. The Astros, I mean, they've got five playoff quality starters. So now you're using some of those guys in the bullpen, which is already a good bullpen. Altuve, he's back with a great year. Alvarez, you can go down that lineup. That's a fantastic team. So that is how I would approach it, because it can be heartbreaking to put all of your bets behind one of those big dogs and they go out right away. I like playing one on each side. And so, you know, playing Dodgers and Astros, not a lot of value there. So you probably want to tilt it a little bit.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely agree. And especially everything you said about the Cardinals, talked about it before a little bit. But at plus 2,000... you can sort of take off some of the pain of knowing that the Cardinals are going to BS their way, like a bit of work, to the World Series. The Montgomery signing, the trade at the deadline, as you said, the Pujols magic, the corner infielders, Arenado and Goldschmidt, Yachty, Wainwright, Lars Nootbaar, had to say it. There's so much to like there, especially in a shortened playoff series, and a team that just sort of always seems to find a way, no matter who's in the jersey. You're just sort of like the Cardinals again. The Jays at plus 2,000, it's not crazy.
There's actually, as we record, a special on at North Star for $22.50 for the Blue Jays, which is definitely not crazy if you want to like really put some of your heart on your sleeve with this Blue Jays run and kind of get a little stake in it.
I know we talk about them a lot, but stripping aside all of our biases, it's really easy. Like, it's easy for me to see the script that it works. They're such a good hitting team. It makes a lot of sense for me to see them put together 2 weeks of solid hitting, and then suddenly they're right there. And maybe they're not playing the Dodgers. Maybe they're playing somebody else in that National League that you like the way they match up against. Maybe somebody comes out. Maybe the Cardinals do come out, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, I like the way they match up against the Cardinals. Or the Padres sneak in, or the Mets, and you're banking on the vibe of the Mets falling apart and saying, this is what the 2015 World Series was supposed to be. It was supposed to be Blue Jays Mets. This is what we were owed. We're finally getting that back. And the other one I like Braves at plus 500. They've shot up. They've had a great second half of the baseball season. They are defending champions. The numbers reflect that as well. I think they have the recipe. So, yeah, I'd be looking at the Braves at plus 500 if you're looking for sort of the lower end. And then the Jays, that special, plus 2250. And the Cardinals at plus 2,000, all ones that I like.
Before we get out of here, who are you specifically not getting anywhere near on this board? There's one team that stands out to me. I know that you've talked about fading the Yankees as we've been doing the show. Is that what you're doing?
I'm fading the Yankees. I think Aaron Judge has obviously had an unbelievable season. The best season we've seen a hitter have in probably 20 years. But I just think you've seen, they're playing so well, it's crazy to say, but there's a lot of holes. There's a lot of guys that you could pitch around. There's The bullpen, as vaunted as it has been, like they're probably not going to be able to use Aroldis Chapman. They've had guys that have come and gone. They're relying on Josh Donaldson and Kiner Falefa and Trevino and Torres has sort of been really hot and really cold. Rizzo's had a good year, but I am selling the Yankees and I am fading the Padres as well. They're a long shot, but I'm sort of out on the Yankees for sure.
The way I would go is the Mets. I'm very skeptical of teams that have a ton of star power because it seems like that attracts the bettors. People are like, oh yeah, the Mets. Who are they in my head? Oh, it's DeGrom, it's Scherzer, it's Alonso, it's Lindor. And I'm not saying that their sort of supporting cast isn't any good. Like clearly this is a good team, but they're almost certainly going to have to go through that wild card round. That adds so much uncertainty.
For sure.
I don't think the odds quite give you enough juice for the risk that's involved in that. And there's a lot of good teams in the NL. You know, I think the Dodgers are better than them. I think the Braves are at least at their level. And, you know, we talked about the Cardinals being sneaky good as well. So considering the odds aren't super long on the Mets, that's a team I would avoid.
Lots to like. The best part of the year is here. October baseball. There is nothing like it. Keep it locked here. We'll be back talking about the playoffs throughout the playoffs. Nick and I will be here on Pitch Talks. If you could leave us a subscription, subscribe, follow, review, rate, whatever you
do. You guys know that stuff.
It helps us out a lot in the podcast rankings. We really appreciate it. We will talk to you next time right here on Pitch Talks.
Pitch Talks. Brought to you by North Star Bets. That's a win.